Good evening and welcome to Free Range Radio on 89.5 WNIJ. I'm Eric Radeke. This evening we feature the Rockford Symphony Orchestra and its 2015-2016 Classics Concert Season. The RSO has traditionally performed in Rockford's Coronado Theater. This year, however, the RSO is going to try something new. So before we get to Stephen Larson, Artistic Director of the Orchestra, and his discussion about all six of the upcoming Classics Concerts, here's Maestro Larson outlining the season's venues.
There's been a lot of repertory that I've wanted to perform, but I look at the Coronado, look at the size of the stage, and look at the size of the auditorium, 2,300 seats there. Music that would just kind of get lost in there for smaller ensembles, and so I just stayed away from programming those pieces. And so I thought this year, why don't we try an experiment? Why don't we try to go out and take the concert to a couple of different locations in the community, smaller venues, places that have nice organs that we can use for the use of Baroque music and things like that, and try a concert there. So we decided to do this experiment. We're going to do two of our spring concerts this year in two churches, and then also a different format there. Rather than a Saturday night performance, we're going to do a Friday evening and a Sunday afternoon performance. We know that people have talked to us before about, I can't go on Saturday nights, or it's not convenient, or I really don't like to go out at night. So we decided to just give this a try and see how this works out for people's schedules. So we chose two churches who both have very good acoustics and very good organs, Our Savior's Lutheran Church and Westminster Presbyterian, both on the east side of town. We're going to do Fridays at Westminster Presbyterian and Sundays at Our Savior's Lutheran. This will enable us to do some works that involve organ and also some smaller ensembles.
This is Free Range Radio on 89.5 WNIJ, where support for this evening's program comes from Upper Cervical Care Center Rockford, a division of First Step Chiropractic, Natural Solutions for Headaches, My Rockford Chiropractor, .com. I'm Eric Radeke with this preview of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra's upcoming Classics Concert Season. Classics Concert No. 1 is just around the corner, Saturday, October 3rd. The performance is in the beautiful Coronado Theater in downtown Rockford. Let's return to Stephen Larson as he will outline Classics Concert No. 1, Tchaikovsky and Brahms.
There is one thread that goes through it, is that most of the programs at least have something to do with Shakespeare. This is a Shakespeare anniversary, and there's been a lot of music inspired by Shakespeare, a lot of operas and a lot of incidental music, and thought we'd bring out a few of them. So we're opening with William Walton's Prelude to Richard III. Walton, a great English composer, was known for a lot of Shakespeare music. He wrote for a lot of movies, particularly movies that featured Laurence Olivier. In 1955, they made a film of Richard III starring Olivier, and he wrote the incidental music for that. So we're doing the prelude to that movie. It has, of course, a lot of the pomp and circumstance you would expect for the prelude to an opera about an English king. The other two pieces are linked a little bit to the last concert. And Tchaikovsky and Brahms, I think, are an interesting duo to compare with each other. They were contemporaries. They knew each other towards the end of their lives. They met in 1888. Edvard Grieg introduced them, as a matter of fact. Edvard Grieg is, of course, on our last program with Tchaikovsky. In some ways, I have a lot of fun thinking about the similarities and differences between Tchaikovsky and Brahms, because in a way they seem worlds apart, and in some ways they're very similar. They hated each other's music. They got along very well personally. Both of them liked to drink and smoke a great deal, and they hit it off on that level, but they just detested each other's music. On the one hand, Brahms is this very conservative composer, late 19th century composer, who writes using the established classical genres, the symphonies, no operas, very severe in some respects to styles of music he likes to write in. Tchaikovsky seems much more flamboyant. He wrote operas, of course. He's known for this exuberance, kind of over-the-top emotional style. But Tchaikovsky was criticized by his fellow Russians by being too closely tied to the Western traditions, to the symphonies, to the symphonic idiom, to the Baroque tradition and things. He loved Mozart. He loved Baroque music. And all of the five important Russian composers looked down on him because he adhered to this symphonic tradition. He wrote six symphonies. So they weren't all that different, really, in their outlook on things. It's just that the music came out much differently. They shared the same birthday, seven years apart. Brahms was born in 1833 and Tchaikovsky in 1840. Of course, Brahms outlived Tchaikovsky by more than a decade. They were, and in terms of personality and appearance, they couldn't have been more different. Brahms was very kind of stocky and had a big head and, of course, that bushy beard that seemed to hide several birds all at once. But Brahms was very to the point and could be very sarcastic at times, and Tchaikovsky was very elegant in his demeanor and very courteous. But yet they got on well when they met. David is a wonderful guy I've known for a number of years, done a number of concerts with him in different places, and David is, to me, the perfect personality for a Tchaikovsky piano concerto. He's rather oversized, he's got a personality bigger than life, he loves, just sort of eats this romantic repertory for breakfast. He's very improvisatory in his approach to the piano. He learned to play the piano by improvising. He didn't read music until fairly well along in his youth. But he just attacks a work like the Tchaikovsky like he's composing it anew. He's very flamboyant, and I've done this piece with him once before, and really very fond memories of it. I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Stephen Larson speaking about David Sim. Sim will be the piano soloist for the RSL's performance of Tchaikovsky's Piano Concerto No. 1, part of Classics Concert No. 1, Tchaikovsky and Brahms. The performance is 7:30 p.m. Saturday, October 3rd. I'm Eric Radeke. This is Free Range Radio on 89.5 WNIJ. Classics Concert No. 2, simply titled Mozart, takes place Saturday, November 7th. In downtown Rockford at the Coronado Theater. Here's Stephen Larson with details.
Our second concert, again, visits Shakespeare twice with an overture by Otto Nicolai, the Merry Wives of Windsor overture, Die lustige Weiber von Windsor, a very successful opera he did on Shakespeare's play. Nicolai was not terribly well known. He died at age 39. He didn't live very long.
Very soon after completing this piece.
Yes, but he was the founder of the Vienna Philharmonic, and I guess we can thank him for that. But this has always been a favorite piece of mine. It's just a really sparkling overture. The next Vaughan Williams piece is very contrast that very much. Ralph Vaughan Williams' Serenade to Music, which he wrote in 1938, taking part of Act 5, Scene 1 of The Merchant of Venice, which is the discussion of the music of the spheres, and took that and set that to music, used it for orchestra and for 16 soloists. Later on, adapted this for use with chorus and four soloists. This piece was first performed in a concert that Sergei Rachmaninoff played his second piano concerto in the first half. Rachmaninoff heard the Vaughan Williams Serenade to Music. He just broke down weeping. He said it was so beautiful, he just couldn't stand it. Need I say any more as to why this is on this program? It's a beautiful piece, and we've done it before, and thought Shakespeare was a good reason to bring it back. Mozart's Sinfonia Concertante is a very unusual piece. There are very few works like it, and it was a kind of a groundbreaking piece at the time he wrote it in 1779. He was 23 at the time, almost an old man by his standards. The reason we're doing this is to honor the 25th anniversary of Rockford's Music Academy. They have produced just dozens and dozens and dozens of fine string players in their 25 years in existence, and two of them are the Geller cousins, Adam and Noah Geller, who are going to be returning to Rockford to play the viola and violin solo parts in this concerto. The Mendelssohn Chorale will join us for the Vaughan Williams Serenade to Music, and also for the Borodin Polovtsian dances. These dances have been very, very popular ever since they were first premiered, chorus and orchestra. Brilliant writing for both voices and orchestra. Borodin himself was a chemist. He was an amateur composer. And he worked on his opera, Prince Igor, for about 10 years and died in 1887 with it incomplete. Nikolai Rimsky-Korsakov completed the work, and it was first performed in the completed version in 1890. And these dances in particular have been popular ever since as fare on symphonic programs. And I think it'll be just a slam-bang way to end a really beautiful concert. Thank you.
Otto Nicolai's overture, The Merry Wives of Windsor, performed there by the Wallace Consort. Nicolai's overture is part of Classics Concert No. 2, Mozart. Support for WNIJ's Free Range Radio comes from Upper Cervical Care Center, Rockford, a division of First Step Chiropractic, where advanced imaging guides spinal correction. MyRockfordChiropractor.com. Eric Radeke with you. Thanks so much for tuning in to this evening's Free Range Radio. Classics Concert No. 3 takes place in Westminster Presbyterian and Our Savior's Lutheran Churches Friday, January 15th and Sunday, January 17th, respectively. Once again, Artistic Director and Conductor of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra, Stephen Larson.
This is a program of 19th and 20th century music, and I really enjoy the mixture in this program. We start out with another Shakespeare tribute, Erich Wolfgang Korngold, best known in this country as one of our greatest film music composers, but was born in Vienna and was a child prodigy that rivaled Mozart. When he was only 20 years old, before he came to the United States, he was commissioned by the Vienna Burgtheater to write a ballet based on the Shakespeare play Much Ado About Nothing. And he wrote a ballet for a chamber orchestra, theater orchestra, I think is what he called it. Very colorful, very exciting piece that just shows the boundless talent. He came to this country and was very successful in Hollywood, writing for the movies. Just wonder what would have happened had he stayed in Europe and was able to develop his talent in the concert halls and the opera houses. He did write opera, he did write concert pieces, but he's still best known for his film music. Silvestri Revueltas, Ocho por Radio, is a real favorite of mine. Eight for the radio or eight for broadcast, depends on how you want to translate this. Piece he wrote in 1933 for eight players. And it's a little bit the effect of what you would hear in 1933 if you were in a Latin American country and you would just turn the radio dial between stations and hear what was being broadcast on the different stations. You'd hear a little bit of a tango music, maybe a little mariachi, the music just keeps on transitioning between these different styles. Two violins, cello, double bass, clarinet, bassoon, trumpet, and an Indian drum are the only instruments in this. It's a really fun piece.
What's it feel like to be in front of that few players?
Never really thought about it before. I think one thing that happens, like we did the suite from the Good Soldier Schweik, last year in a very small group there, I think 12 players. The first thing you notice is that you can communicate much more easily with individual players without, of course, saying anything. Everybody's got everybody's eye. And so there's much more of a feeling of chamber music than a conducted piece. And I guess you conduct that way too. One conducts that way. You don't have to worry about keeping the whole group together so much as just doing a little bit of suggesting here and there and letting them play. It's a fun experience. One of the things that always tickles me about this piece is that this really shows the contrast of what the limits or the bounds of human personality. He could be, to use a vernacular, just such a jerk. I mean, in his life, he was just a horrible person. Just the way he treated people, not to even mention his views on the Jews and things like that, but he was not a good person, not a nice person at all. So we've got this dichotomy here of this piece, the Siegfried Idyll, which he wrote as a birthday present for his wife, Cosima. Now, isn't that nice, right? On the occasion of, this is after the birth of their son Siegfried. Now, isn't this nice, writing a birthday present for his wife, who he stole from his favorite conductor, Hans von Bülow. She was married to him. And she was the daughter of his good friend, Franz Liszt. And Franz Liszt almost never forgave him for this. But I think it was part of Wagner's personality that von Bülow forgave him and Liszt forgave him, and they got on with their lives after that. So he wrote this wonderful little intimate piece as a birthday present for her and played it on Christmas Day morning in 1870, as she came down the stairs, the orchestra was at the bottom of the stairs playing this beautiful piece for her. It must have been lovely. But it's a beautiful piece. And as a matter of fact, the piece was so beautiful that he decided to recycle some of the tunes into his opera Siegfried, which he wrote in 1876. And being the practical man he was, he had vowed that he would never release this. This was just going to be a sacred gift to his wife. But when he needed money a few years later, he decided to publish it, make a few bucks off of it. Luckily, we can deal with his music today and not deal with his personality. He's dead. Strauss, one of the most talented composers, I think, who ever lived, said that the only thing he liked to do that wasn't musical, he played a card game called Scat. He played Scat because it was the only thing that would keep his brain from just constantly running music through his head. It was the only thing that would distract him. He had this incredible appetite for music of all periods. In 1923, he was asked to do a ballet evening in Vienna, and he was at that time researching and becoming familiar with music of the French Baroque, and he decided to arrange or freely arrange or be inspired by some of the keyboard music of François Couperin, the great French Baroque composer. So he wrote this ballet and arranged the dance suite, which he called the dance suite after Couperin, a small orchestra featuring a harpsichord as a member of the orchestra. And of course, a harpsichord is going to immediately throw the sound back into the Baroque period. So that's kind of the touchstone there that links it back to the Baroque period. It's kind of a fascinating piece to listen to because you are conscious of hearing these Baroque tunes. You're conscious of the Baroque timbre of the harpsichord, but yet you're hearing definite late Romantic textures and harmonies, instrumentation ingeniously woven together. So it's a fascinating piece. And again, this is one of these pieces I don't think we would have been able to pull off in the Coronado. I just don't think the Coronado is, I think it's just too big for it. But in a smaller venue, I think people are really going to be able to absorb this piece and really appreciate it for what it is.
Classics Concert Number 3. Yes, concerts take place Friday, January 15th and Sunday, January 17th in Westminster Presbyterian and Our Savior's Lutheran Churches. You can always get performance information and purchase tickets for any of the RSO's Classics concerts at their website, rockfordsymphony.com. Eric Radeke with you. Well, we're already halfway through the upcoming 2015-2016 RSO Classics concert season, concert number 4. RSO Artists in the Spotlight takes place Saturday, February 13th. Back in the Coronado Theater, of course, in downtown Rockford, here is Stephen Larson.
We were supposed to paying tribute again to Shakespeare in this program, and I thought I was, because all these years I thought that Beethoven's Coriolan Overture was based on Shakespeare's Coriolanus, and it's not. It's actually based on a play by von Collins, I think is his name, a German playwright of about that period, 1809. Doesn't matter. We can pretend it's Shakespeare. It's a suitably tragic and serious overture. Would do well for either play, I think. They both deal with the same subject. Different playwrights, but the same subject. This is a piece that we haven't done for a number of years, and it's always been one of my favorite overtures. The Ibert Flute Concerto, Jacques Ibert. I wanted to feature one of our orchestral members. We do this from time to time, and it was time for Scott Medlicka, our principal flutist, to be featured, and I asked Scott, what do you want to play? And I kind of held my breath after that, and he said, I'd like to do the Jacques Ibert Flute Concerto, and I said, oh, good, because that's pretty what I was hoping for. It's a really just a sparkling, delightful piece. Ibert, a French 20th century composer. I think it's one of his best works. Also on this concert, we're featuring the entire trombone section, all three of them, on Eric Iwasen's Triple Concerto for Three Trombones. Iwasen is a composition teacher at Juilliard, known for writing a lot of brass music. This is a piece that was just premiered a couple years ago and suggested to me, and I thought, well, why not? Let's do it. So we're going to feature woodwinds and brass on this concert. Kind of a really very, very showy concerto featuring the brass section. I'm really looking forward to this. Respighi's The Birds. Suite taken from a ballet. Music of the 17th century, back at the time when composers were experimenting with capturing bird songs in music and trying to accurately replicate the sounds of nature. And Ottorino Respighi, a 20th century Italian composer, took these pieces, some of this, these pieces, and put them together into a modern suite. This is just absolutely delightful music. The chicken, the cuckoo, the nightingale. It's just a fun way to end any program.
Ludwig van Beethoven's music there. Franz Bruggen leading the orchestra of the 18th century in a performance of the Coriolan Overture Opus 62 of Beethoven, part of Classics Concert No. 4. I'm Eric Radeke, and you are listening to Free Range Radio on 89.5 WNIJ. Classics Concerts No. 5, Friday, March 11th and Sunday, March 13th in Westminster Presbyterian and Our Savior's Lutheran Churches. Classics Concerts, perfectly suited for these venues. Artistic Director Stephen Larson discussing Classics Concert No. 5.
This concert features all Baroque composers, German composers who lived pretty much at the same time, grew up not too far from each other. We start with Georg Philipp Telemann, a really fascinating figure, self-taught composer, one of the most prolific composers of all times. Was the godfather to C.P.E. Bach, and gave C.P.E., Carl Philipp Emanuel, gave him Philipp, came from his name, Georg Philipp, and a good friend of Johann Sebastian Bach's, and yet a composer we don't hear a whole lot in the larger concert halls, mostly because his pieces, they just don't quite hold up in the bigger spaces, I don't think. But one of the things about Telemann is that he wrote a lot of what we would call program music, long before program music was supposed to have been invented. And one of the pieces he wrote, it goes under a couple of different names, Overture in C Major, the Hamburg Ebb and Flow, Suite in C Major, a number of different titles. Anyway, the piece is all the same. It is a rather inventive and fanciful evocation of both the water conditions at the harbor in Hamburg, Germany, connecting it with Greek mythology and the various sprites and water gods and goddesses and things like that. And each movement is a typical member of a Baroque suite. It has a dance form, but each one purports to capture how the god Trident dealt with the waters at that particular point. And it's really a very cleverly written piece, and lots of delightful opportunity for instrumental solos. There's a section movement for two recorders, for instance. When's the last time you heard a recorder play at the Rockford Symphony? It's a piece I've wanted to do for quite some time, and now finally we've got a chance to do it. We go from there to one of Handel's organ concertos. Handel wrote a number of organ concertos in England, and the thing most people don't know about English organs is that they didn't have pedal boards at the time. They just had manuals. So these organ concertos don't have any feet action. It's just the hands. But one of the most popular ones that he wrote was given the title The Cuckoo and the Nightingale, because of the organ's imitation of both the cuckoo and the nightingale in the organ's parts as it gets tossed back and forth between the orchestra and the organist. Joining us on this is a newcomer to town, Joseph Schenk, who was the organist at Our Savior's Lutheran and at First Lutheran, an incredible musician, incredible keyboard virtuoso, studied at Juilliard, who's going to be playing the organ part for this. Bach's cantatas, most all of them are sacred cantatas. They were designed to be performed in church as part of the Lutheran church service, and that's probably where they sound the best. So we are going to be able to put the cantata in a church setting using the organ as the continuo and bringing in Mendelssohn's the members of the Mendelssohn chorale to sing the solo and the choral parts. This, where do you start with a cantata? There's so many of them, and there's so many wonderful ones. I rather arbitrarily just picked 147, which has the German title Herz und Mund und Tat und Leben. That's a little bit difficult to deal with. Most people know it by the English title of the most popular tune, Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. It was made popular by Dame Myra Hess, actually, when she arranged it into a keyboard work. But most people know that tune under that name, Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring. And it does create a very tuneful way of holding the cantata together for first-time listeners.
The whole history of his writing the cantatas is fascinating in that it's just his job.
It was a job. You had to write this for church, and you just did it. You had one for every Sunday. And they lasted about 20 minutes, and you had to write it, and you had to copy out the parts or have your sons do it, rehearse it and perform it, and then go on to the next one. And he did a fair amount of recycling, which he did with this piece, too. This is actually originally written when he was in Weimar to be performed during Advent. When he got to Leipzig, there was a tradition in Leipzig that on the second, from the second to fourth Sundays in Advent, there was silence. There was musical silence. You did not perform music in the church, so he couldn't use it. So he changed some words and added a few sections and retooled it so it could be done during the Feast of the Visitation in July. And it was first performed July 2nd in the year 1723.
Like you said, you just bang it out. Come Monday, start all over again for Sunday. Was there ever a completion of the cycle, or was it just...
It was never intended to be a cycle. It was just you just wrote something for the Sunday in the liturgical year. I think about 250 total. Some have been lost. Again, as I said, others were recycled into other pieces and used for other works. It was not recycled. I actually grew up being told a myth that he actually wrote several hundred more than that. And they discovered that early in the 20th century, when the Bach revival was going on, they discovered that the schoolboys in the at the church there were wrapping their lunches in the manuscripts of Bach cantatas, which gave rise to the phrase Bach's lunch. It wasn't true, but it's a good story anyway. The most familiar piece on this concert is going to be the suite from Handel's Water Music, Suite Number 2. Like a lot of things Handel wrote, this had something of a colorful history. It was July 17th of 1717. How about that? 1717. King George I had requested a concert to be performed on the Thames River on a barge. And so Handel wrote this music, quite a lot of music actually, which they played as they floated first up the river with the tide coming in. And then they played it in place while dozens and dozens of barges and boats came out to hear the concert. And the king liked the music so much that he requested it to be played three more times as they floated back down the river, well into the early hours of the morning. Handel capitalized on this popularity by arranging the music into three suites in different keys. And we're playing the suite number 2, probably the most popular of the three suites, the suite in D major, is the one that uses trumpets and timpani, gives a nice festive conclusion to the evening, or the afternoon, depending on when you come.
Classics Concerts Number 5, the second of two chamber orchestra concerts. The Rockford Symphony will be performing in its 2015-2016 Classics Concerts season. As Maestro Larson said just a moment ago, J.S. Bach's Cantata 147 contains the very popular Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring. Let's listen to legendary organist Virgil Fox performing a beautiful version of Jesu Joy of Man's Desiring, continuing this evening's Free Range Radio.
Thank you.
Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, from the Cantata 147, part of Classics Concert No. 5, given by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra in their upcoming Classics Concert season. Eric Radeke with you. Support for WNIJ's Free Range Radio comes from Upper Cervical Care Center, Rockford, a division of First Step Chiropractic, where advanced imaging guides spinal correction. MyRockfordChiropractor.com. And on to the final concert of the upcoming season, April 30th, 2016. The title of the concert is simply Tchaikovsky and Emily Bear.
This concert ties together a bit with the first concert we did, with the presence of Tchaikovsky and Grieg, who were together when they met Brahms in 1888. And also, this is Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony, and we had performed Brahms' Fourth Symphony on our first concert. And these two Fourth Symphonies couldn't be more different. They're both minor key symphonies, to be sure, but the whole way that this symphony hits you is much, much different than Brahms's. Tchaikovsky wrote for the audience. He wrote consciously thinking about how the audience is going to process a particular musical moment. How are they going to react to it emotionally? How is it going to affect what they've heard so far up to that moment and their ability to remember it? He was less concerned about form than Brahms was. Brahms was very much of a procedural composer. Brahms, the composer who had gone back and studied in great, great detail contrapuntal procedures going back into the Renaissance and into the Baroque. And it seemed like when you take apart Brahms's music, you feel like it's almost like taking a little cog out of a Swiss watch. One note is going to make the piece fall apart if it's not precisely in place. It's that well put together. Tchaikovsky seems to paint with a broader brush and with much more of a feeling of how is this going to hit the audience? How is this going to affect people? He wrote, as a matter of fact, to his patroness, Nadezhda von Meck, a wealthy Russian woman who for 13 years supported him very, very generously with the condition that they never meet. But gave him a large stipend and actually enabled him to become the first real full-time Russian composer. All the other Russian composers at the time did something else for their day job, so to speak, but Tchaikovsky could just concentrate on composing. And he wrote to her about the program for this work. And it definitely has a program, and I think you can overdo the program, but it's helpful for any listener to think about this. The first movement, by far the longest, about 20 minutes in length, it deals with fate and how fate controls our lives. And even though we think we might be free of it, we want to be free of it, fate is always going to come back and determine the course of our lives. The second movement is about childhood, about the joyful reminiscence, but the wistful reminiscence of childhood, how we wish we could go back to it again, but we know we can't. It's a bittersweet memory. The third movement is about play, the playfulness. And he does this playfulness in this movement in a very obvious way. It starts out with just strings, playing pizzicato, just plucking the strings. No bowed notes at all. And all of a sudden, you go into a section where only the woodwinds are playing. And from there, you go to a section where only the brass are playing. And then just back to the strings and back to the woodwinds. It's a very consciously, playfully constructed movement. Then the last movement. Tchaikovsky calls this Russia. He says this is a view of his homeland from places when he was abroad at the time he wrote this piece. And all of the joyful memories, and it includes several Russian folk tunes that he remembers very fondly. But then at the end, the fate theme comes back from the first movement, reminding us again that, well, we might be enjoying ourselves and thinking about our homeland, but we are not immune from fate. It still is going to control our lives and where we end up. The piece begins in the minor key, very much in the minor key in the first movement, does not move to the major very, very frequently, but finally comes to the major key for a very triumphant, rousing ending in the finale. Grieg and Tchaikovsky became very good friends. Grieg was very enamored of Tchaikovsky's music and vice versa. Although they composed very differently. Grieg was known as the composer of miniatures. He wrote no symphonies. One symphony, which he destroyed early in his life. He was most at home writing songs and short, small pieces for the piano. He was a brilliant pianist, and he wrote this piano concerto under the very strong influence of Schumann's piano concerto. He had heard, as a teenager, Clara Schumann play Robert Schumann's piano concerto, and was very much moved by it. And people have commented that there is a similarity between Grieg's piano concerto and Schumann's. There certainly is. They're both in the same key. They both open with the same kind of an opening flourish for the piano. And they both make sort of the same technical demands on the soloist. And our soloist in this case is going to be Emily Baer, who recently played the Schumann concerto, so now she's moving to the Grieg concerto. This will be her premiere of this work with the Rockford Symphony. And after that, I've asked her to play one of the recent pieces she's written for piano and orchestra, which she calls Voyages. Premiered this last Christmas Eve in Santa Fe, and very much looking forward to doing this here in Rockford. And of course, everybody's going to be very excited to have her on the stage and to hear one of her own pieces.
Tell me more about her composing.
Emily is a very talented composer. As a matter of fact, I think, although we know her as an incredibly gifted pianist, I think if you had to pin her down and say, if you could do one thing for the rest of your life, either play the piano or compose, she'd probably say, I want to compose. That's what she's most excited about doing. And she's very interested in particular for writing for films. She's been studying film composition in New York and has written some short subjects. And this piece is, in a way, it's a little cinematic in its scope. She has written it for a full symphony orchestra and for herself as the sort of the obbligato piano in the orchestra. Not really a concerto, but a necessary part as part of the orchestral texture. This is, I think, the first work that she's written for orchestra that she has actually scored herself from start to finish without anybody's assistance, which is a tremendous achievement. We might look back at Mozart and think, well, Mozart was writing symphonies when he was 8 and 9 years old. Yeah, but Papa helped him. This is Emily all on her own, doing everything from start to finish. Carl Nielsen's most popular work, in terms of the number of performances anyway, is his overture to his opera Masquerade, or Masquerade if you prefer. It's a sparkling, just delightful, vivacious work, not very long. Was written in 1906, premiered in 1906. And the opera has not fared well in history, but the overture continues to be played very frequently by many orchestras.
Thank you.
Music of Edvard Grieg, performed by Stephen Kovacevic and the English Chamber Orchestra, a portion of the Piano Concerto in A Minor, part of Classics Concert No. 6. Well, that does it for a look at this year's Classics Concert season of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. Tickets may be purchased for any of the concerts via the Rockford Symphony's website, rockfordsymphony.com. You can get WNIU's broadcast schedule of the 2015-2016 Classics Concert Season at our sister station's website, wniu.org. For Free Range Radio and 89.5 WNIJ, I'm Eric Radeke. Thank you so much for listening. This is 89.5 WNIJ DeKalb Rockford, WNIW LaSalle, WNIQ Sterling, and WNIE Freeport.